Money Radio. Thank you for joining us today. And now we welcome Dan Gardner. He is a journalist and author, co-author of a new book along with Philip Tetlock. The book is Super Forecasting, The Art and Science of Prediction. Super Forecasting by Philip Tetlock and Dan Gardner. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, hello.
We've heard it before. Nobody has a crystal ball. And yet, this lays forth the idea that we really can forecast the future. I think we kind of do it every day in our lives, but you're talking about really forecasting things that most people don't think they can forecast.
Yeah. Well, people sort of have extreme views on forecasting. There are some folks who are very, I would say, credulous. They will listen to the guru who comes along and tells them what the global economy will look like 100 years from now. They'll listen to the most sweeping forecasts that, frankly, I and my co-author Phil Tetlock would say are just not possible to make. They're just so far in the future. This is so grand. We just can't do that. That's some folks. And then there are other folks who say, well, you know, all forecasting is impossible. You can't forecast the future. Well, that's just manifestly not true. In fact, our position on this is basically a middle position. We have lots of evidence that some things are predictable. We know that the sun will rise in the east tomorrow. We can predict traffic jams at rush hour, that sort of thing. And then there's lots of things that we cannot predict. We might want to predict, like what the global economy will look like 100 years from now, but we can't predict those things. So in fact, there's this wide array in our reality of degrees of predictability. And I think that what Phil's research has shown, and I should emphasize that Phil is a very eminent psychologist. He's now at the Wharton School of Business, and he's spent 30 years studying expert predictions. And I think what Phil's research has shown is that as long as we're cautious about our ability to predict the future, because our desire to predict the future will always exceed our ability, as long as we're cautious about it, we can, to a degree, predict accurately, and if we are intent on learning and getting better at it, we can actually become quite good at it.
Is it really more a matter of probabilities than outright prediction? We're, as you say, we're not going to get them all right.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting aspects is what actually constitutes a prediction. Some people think that a prediction is, you know, saying it will happen or it won't happen, and it does or it doesn't, and that somehow if you say, well, it probably will happen, that that's not a prediction. That's not really what the dictionary definition of prediction is, but let's leave that aside. What's important to understand is that certainty about what will and won't happen is a mistake. And this is one of the really interesting insights from Phil's research, is that it tends to be that the people who are intellectually humble, the people who are more likely to say, I think it's going to happen, but I can't be certain, or more likely to say, I don't know, those are actually the people who are more likely to be able to accurately predict the future than are the sorts of people who come along and say boldly and strongly, I know exactly what's going to happen. Those people tend to be disasters as forecasters.
Even though they tend to be right, you know, like a broken clock about twice a day.
But, yeah, that's right.
But that brings us around to your co-author's research, Philip Tetlock's research, something called the Good Judgment Project, or GJP. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the origins of GJP and where it is now.
Well, you might say that the origins go all the way back to the Iraq War. You'll recall that the United States intelligence community concluded that it was a slam dunk. It was 100% certain that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and that he would soon have nuclear weapons. Of course, that turned out to be not true, and that very confident statement had very bad consequences. After the Iraq War invasion and the discovery that the weapons of mass destruction did not exist, the intelligence community, to its enormous credit, took its failure very seriously and has examined what it does and how it can get better at what it does. And one of the things that they realized was, you know, we spend enormous amounts of money, billions of dollars, literally billions of dollars every year producing forecasts on these very important questions, the questions that the White House and the State Department have. But do we know how good that forecasting is? No, we don't. In fact, that forecasting of the intelligence community isn't analyzed for accuracy, even though it's extremely important, extremely expensive, and they've been doing it for decades.
Why not?
And well, this is one of the. It's almost bizarre to think, why isn't this analyzed for accuracy? In fact, it's not that unusual, believe it or not. There are very large corporations, governments all around the world that spend an enormous amount of money on forecasting, and they don't analyze it for accuracy. And one of the reasons why, there are many reasons why, but one of the reasons why is that the argument has been made that it's basically not possible to rigorously, scientifically analyze forecast for accuracy in a way that you can compare the results between forecasters, between forecasting methods, and so on. And one of Phil Tetlock's great contributions to this research is that he has shown, no, if you set up what he calls a forecasting tournament, which is basically ask a whole bunch of very precise questions of a whole bunch of different people using different methods, and then you can actually analyze the results, and the results are actually comparable between people and between methods. And so what Phil Tetlock was able to convince the intelligence community was, look, you folks have to set up this sort of thing, this sort of forecasting tournament, and you will thereby learn, number one, how good are you guys at forecasting? Number two, are there other methods and other individuals who are better than you are, and can you learn from what they are doing to, in fact, improve yourself? And so that's, in fact, what the intelligence community did. There's an office in the Director of National Intelligence that set up this enormous forecasting tournament at considerable expense. They went to some of the world's leading researchers in forecasting, and ultimately there were five teams, university-based teams, set up to compete to forecast the sorts of questions that intelligence analysts have to forecast. Very difficult questions like, will Greece default? Will Russia escalate in Syria? That sort of thing. And they used different methods, and one of those teams was the Good Judgment Project, led by Phil Tetlock, and the core of the GJP were volunteers. Literally, they went out and they recruited, they put out public notices, and they recruited anybody who was interested. If you want to come and try your hand at this sort of forecasting, geopolitical forecasting, just sign up. And so they got literally thousands of volunteers. At any one time, there were between 2,600 and 3,000 volunteers. Over the course of 4 years, they had more than 20,000 volunteers. Most of these people were ordinary folks. They're not specialists. They don't have particular expertise. They don't have access to classified information. And they had them make hundreds of forecasts. They asked hundreds of questions. And at the end of the forecasting tournament, number one, we can say that the Good Judgment Project won, hands down. And the other thing that came out of this forecasting tournament was the discovery that there was a very small stratum, maybe about 1 or 2% of all these volunteers, who were phenomenally good forecasters. They were top of the charts, and so they were called super forecasters. And so then the question becomes, what makes them so good?
Indeed, that is the question, because now we've gone beyond just the wisdom of the crowds to those who have some specific forecasting skills. And what have you found are the common skills that make someone a super forecaster?
Well, to understand why they're good, the first thing you have to think about is, how do most people think? You know, if I posed a question to you like, will Greece default or will Russia escalate in Syria, how would most people answer that question? Well, we know from psychology that it's natural human decision making to have a quick, intuitive response to that sort of question. That sense that somehow, yeah, I think this is going to happen. It comes to us almost automatically, quickly, in almost every circumstance. And some people are very impulsive. When they get that initial intuitive response, they say, that's it, final answer, I'm going with that. Other people are a little bit more cautious. They know, well, I should think about it. And so they go and they investigate on the basis of that intuition. They say, well, if I nose around and look for information, will it prove that my intuition is right? Both those methods, both those responses are misguided. And what the super forecasters do, the very first thing that they do is they do not do what I just described. When they first have that initial gut reaction, they do not go with it, and they do not drive their investigation of the facts. They do not frame it in terms of that initial gut response. They start off by thinking much more coolly and logically and analytically about what exactly the question is asking. And then they proceed from there. They're very methodical, meticulous thinkers. One of the interesting outcomes of the research was the ranks of the super forecasters, there's a disproportionate number of engineers among them, software engineers, that sort of thing. And that's probably not a coincidence. It's because engineers are taught to think sort of very coolly and methodically, to unpack the problem and proceed in a very methodical fashion. And when you look at how super forecasters tackle these questions, that's exactly what they're doing. They're very, very methodical, meticulous. The other thing that they do is they're constantly questioning their own thinking. So when they work their way forward through a problem and they come to a conclusion, they stop and then they say, okay, that's what I'm thinking. Is it right? Does it make sense? Did I make mistakes? Where are the mistakes in my thinking? So they're very self-critical. They go back and look at their own thinking. Psychologists call that metacognition. They think about thinking a lot. And underlying all this is sort of a level of intellectual humility. Right? You wouldn't take all this great care and caution. You wouldn't examine your own thinking carefully if you didn't start from a position where you say, you know what, I make mistakes. I'm human. People make mistakes. I'm not some brilliant genius. I'm not a psychic. I'm just an ordinary human being trying to make sense of this great big complex universe. And so that's sort of the philosophical space that they start at. And that sort of informs what they do as they work through the problem.
Does this mean that intuition is not all it's cracked up to be, or is it still a good foundation for forecasting?
Oh, intuition, you know, that's such an interesting question, because very often when we talk about decision-making generally, whether it's in forecasting or in any other form, it's very often presented as a choice, you know, either go with your gut or go with your head. And one or the other is right and the other is wrong. That's not really what psychology tells us. That's not really what we've learned about intuition. Intuition can be, in many circumstances, an invaluable resource, a good launch pad, something we should pay attention to under certain circumstances. But we also know from psychology that intuition can go horribly wrong. So it has to be carefully monitored. Yeah. It has to be restrained. So it's I would caution people not to think that, you know, intuition is bad or good, but to think of it as a resource that has to be carefully monitored.
All right. We're talking with Dan Gardner, and the book is Super Forecasting, The Art and Science of Prediction, written by Philip Tetlock and Dan Gardner. Super Forecasting. And I'm forecasting that we'll be right back in just a moment. Money Radio, thank you so much for joining us. We're talking with Dan Gardner, author of Super Forecasting, The Art and Science of Prediction. Super Forecasting by Dan Gardner and Philip Tetlock. This is an incredible story. You've also developed a website, goodjudgment.com.
Mm-hmm. It's ongoing research, and people are invited to go and try their hand at forecasting. You know, one of the really important insights that came out of the research is that forecasting is a skill like any other, and people who approach it with the same sort of mentality that an athlete approaches training, which is to say, you know what, I have to train in order to get better. I have to train, I have to get feedback from my training, I have to learn from that feedback. And if you rigorously do this and you approach it with that mentality, you will improve that skill.
Can the super news junkies actually compete against the super quants? Because nowadays we've got supercomputers out there analyzing tons and tons of data. Can we, as individuals paying attention, keep up with that?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. I should have mentioned about the super forecasters is that what they did in producing their very accurate forecasts, it did not involve any sort of arcane math or big data analysis or anything like that. Overwhelmingly, what they did was very human. They looked at the information, they thought hard about the information, and then they formed a subjective judgment. Now, a lot of folks, when they hear that, they say, okay, that's very interesting, but you know, this is the new era of information technology. Isn't that stuff going to go the way of the horse and buggy? Aren't we going to replace all these forecasters with computers and algorithms and big data analysis? And so at the beginning of the book, we tackled that question. And one of the ways we tackled that question was to go and talk to the engineer who was the man behind Watson, IBM's famous right. Watson supercomputer. And his answer was, and I thought this was very interesting, he said, subjective judgment, the human element in forecasting, is never going to go away. The ability of computers and information technology to produce increasingly accurate forecasts will grow. And we should pay attention to it, and we should use that ability to the extent that we can. But we should recognize that it's never going to answer all the questions we want answered, and that the human element is still going to provide value. He actually used the metaphor of chess. If you go back to the days of Deep Blue, who beat, you know, the IBM computer that beat
Kasparov,
the great Russian grandmaster.
Yeah.
And then in the years afterward, computer programs now just routinely beat the best humans. Well, does that mean that humans are finished and we should just leave chess to the computers? And the answer is no. This new form of chess has arisen, which is basically a hybrid in which you have superb human chess players who, with the aid of these programs, play against each other. And what they find is that the combination of the program and the creativity of the human being, in fact, creates a dynamic force. It creates something very exciting that exceeds either computer or human. So I suspect that increasingly, as we go forward, it will seem increasingly strange for people to simply say, well, I think that this is going to happen because, you know, my subjective judgment tells me that. No, people are going to be increasingly relying upon these other information technology
right.
tools. But you're not going to eliminate the people from the equation.
It's tools so in the toolbox. You still need somebody to use those tools.
Exactly yeah. right. Exactly right. Subjective judgment is going to continue to be part of the process. We've got to get better at making subjective judgments.
Dan Gardner, co-author of Super Forecasting, Philip Tetlock and Dan Gardner, Super Forecasting, The Art and Science of Prediction. This is a very intriguing book, Super Forecasting. And Dan, if you'll just hang on, I want to talk to you off air about some stock picks, okay?
Sure, okay.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.